Blog Talk Radio.
Get out our tools for understanding, nurturing, and building our universe using the Michael Teachings. The most basic foundation of the Michael Teachings is that we are here to learn how to choose and to choose how to learn. For more information on the Michael Teachings, please visit truthloveenergy.com and check out the basic introduction so you too can join in with the growing number of students from around the world. And get out your dialing fingers because we'd love to hear what you have to say. 646-200-0772. I'm your host and resident Michael Channel. Enjoy the show. And Michael Speaks is back on the air after a long, long hiatus, and we're now called Truth Love Energy Radio. I decided to change the show's title to reflect more of an emphasis on the information and away from me and the actual channeling, because there's not going to be any live channeling during these shows that are live because it's a little bit too complicated to run things and channel. Plus, I think this suits the nature and the direction of the show and keeps the branding kind of consistent among the various offerings from truthloveenergy.com. Now, if you're new to the Michael Teachings and to this show, again, just check out truthloveenergy.com for a basic introduction so you can get more out of our discussions here. Or just Google Michael Teachings and you'll see a world of information come to your fingertips. Without a basic introduction, some of our discussions might sound like we're playing a big game of Dungeons and Dragons, so study up and it'll all start to make perfect practical sense. I'd also like to give a shout out to Dave Gregg, who hosts MichaelTeachings.com, and that's where students can explore an even wider spectrum of input from the teachings and from other students and other channels, so make sure you check that out too. And if you're listening to the live show and you would like to participate today, write down this number and call it. It's 646-200-0772. And please be patient while you're on hold because we won't be able to hear you until we introduce you into the show, but you'll be able to hear us. And you can also join us in the chat room provided by Blog Talk Radio. Let me make sure I have that launched here. Hold on. If you don't see it, it's because I didn't launch it. Hold on. There we go. Let's see if it pops up. We had trouble with this the other day, so bear with me. And if you're listening to this and it's recorded, this is just the nature of live radio. Okay, the chat room's up, so if you're here, you can now log in there. Sorry about that. And if you were already logged in and you don't see the chat room, just refresh the page because now it should show up. So anyway, today we're going to be exploring the overleaves of the major candidates, the hopes and fears we share as participants in and observers of the upcoming U.S. presidential election, And we're going to explore ways that the older soul can contribute to a better world for the self and for others. I can't believe the presidential election is 2 days away. And I know some of you may be rolling your eyes that yet another talk show is focusing on the election. But, I mean, come on, it's one of the most important and historic elections of our time. And I know that that's been said before, but that's why I'm saying it's one of the most important. And every election's important, but never have we had a woman running, and not only a black man running, but he's now on the verge of presidency. That's amazing. It's very exciting. And if you don't find some amount of awe in that, then you've probably let yourself become jaded. And maybe today's show will help you jumpstart your enthusiasm again. Who knows? We'll be bringing in callers onto the air soon, so hang in there when you do call. You'll be able to hear us, like I said, but we won't be able to hear you until we introduce you, so be patient. I'd like to have today's discussion in focus on at least three elements: the essence and the personalities of the key candidates and how those might play into the shifts in consciousness happening in the world. I'd also like to focus on our hopes and our fears as they're exposed by these shifts and changes in our world and how we address those. And I'd like to focus on what we can do as older souls who are not so interested in the drama, the turmoil, the fear, the disruption, to not only feel a part of the world and not so isolated, but also what we can do to contribute to what we might see as a brighter, healthier, embracing, inclusive, peaceful path for not only ourselves, but for our loved ones in the world. So before we get into the show, I did want to talk about the information shared from Michael that suggests that we as a species are moving through a shift in awareness and consciousness. And this shows up in a lot of different ways, so it's not an unfamiliar concept to a lot of you because it's talked about across the board in a lot of different teachings. But in the Michael teachings, it's a shift that's described by a shift in predominant soul ages on the planet. And a person's soul age basically describes not only the amount of experience a person's soul or essence has accumulated over lifetimes, but also where one is in comprehending and digesting those experiences. One soul age is not better than any other, any more than a 45-year-old is better than a 5-year-old. They're just different perspectives based on different experiences and collections of experiences. So for more details about the soul ages, the basic intro at truthloveenergy.com is a good start. And recently, a wonderful creative person by the name of Terry Binning, she put up her take on the introduction to soul ages in video form at YouTube. So if you just do a search for introduction to soul ages or soul ages, it should come up. And it's kind of a quick and dirty introduction, but it's really lovely, and a lot of people are finding it to be very helpful, so make sure you check that out. So currently we're shifting from what is called a young soul paradigm and into a mature soul paradigm. That basically means that the world has been populated mostly by what Michael would refer to as young souls for a very long time, and now many of those young souls are evolving into mature souls, bringing the population of mature souls into higher and higher numbers. And so with the population of mature souls growing, this is causing a shift in paradigms. Now, this has taken over 2,000 years, so it's not a quick process. But the young soul paradigm is basically a focus on gathering experiences that are focused on getting the most out of the physical plane. So the emphasis is on material gain, competition, winning, having, and it's kind of like the teenager age of our souls. And sometimes this shows up as being greedy, oppressive, selfish, and exploitive. So it does show up in both positive and negative ways. The mature soul paradigm is more about realizing that the material plane is not all there is, and kind of looking up and saying, who am I? And what does this all mean? And you start to look for your place in the world, how you fit into the world and into relationships. And it's important to connect and empathize with not only your fellow human being, but it becomes important to to recognize the emotional realm of other species and our place in caring for the planet, and that we're all in this together. So the world starts to shrink into what feels like a global village, and we realize the impact of our choices upon each other. So this can show up in kind of a negative way as being a lot of emotional turmoil, a lot of drama, a lot of intensity, and anything that really helps to break down and bring the emotional realm into focus so that we can all start to empathize and connect. So from about 1987 to now, the world has been shifting more and more away from the young soul perspective and into the mature soul perspective, putting into wider and wider effect our concerns about the planet, about animals and about other countries, about our shared resources, about our rights and the rights of others, and breaking down barriers and coming together as more cohesive, involved, caring, and responsible species. So we're in the early stages of this shift, relatively speaking, so we're going to see a lot of baby and young souls kicking and fighting against the shift, but the paradigm is pretty much already in place. And now it seems we're on the verge of really, truly beginning to see the mature soul paradigm really take root and begin to implement what that means. So that's the gist behind why this election may very well be a key in that evolution of our species collectively. But please understand that this is just a short program, and you should explore this concept further in other places. There's no way I can really cover all of it and all the nuances and details here. So, okay, so first things first, without further delay, I would like to introduce my panel for the day.
I love the theme music.
And here comes Cypress the Sage.
Hi.
Hey, Cypress.
Hi.
How do you like that? I got you guys a little theme song going.
Yeah, it's a slightly creepy.
I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, I thought it was cute.
It was ponderous.
I like it to be fun. And I worked hard on picking out that little theme.
I have no doubt.
I can just see you guys.
I know what went through your head.
Yeah, me too.
Hey, thank you guys for being a part of the show today. I'm having trouble navigating everything, so I don't know.
Troy, I still don't have a chat room, and I even logged out and logged back in.
Oh, I have a chat room here. And Anne's here, and a lot of people are here, so you might have to refresh the page.
I refreshed, and
oh,
then I
did.
Logged out.
Well, shoot. I don't know what to tell you. I hope that
don't
you can
find... Don't worry about it.
Okay, you're on here, so that's all that matters. I'll try to keep my eyes on the chat room. So let's just dive right into the major presidential and vice presidential candidates' overleaves, okay? So I'm going to read those off, and then we'll talk about them. Vice President Joseph Biden, one of the Democratic candidates, is channeled as a second-level mature sage in growth with perseverance and skepticism, with a chief negative feature of arrogance. And Barack Obama, who is fifth-level mature, a priest in growth with caution and idealism with arrogance. And the Republican candidates, vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin, she's a second-level young warrior in dominance with perseverance and idealism and a chief negative feature of stubbornness. And John McCain, sixth-level young sage in dominance with perseverance and pragmatism with chief negative feature of self-destruction. And for you guys listening who don't know what these words mean, the introduction will really help, so check that out. So first things first, if you look at these overleaves and if they're accurate, and keep in mind that different channels are possibly going to get different sets of overleaves for various reasons. One is just inaccuracy and lack of clarity in channeling. The other reason is because there are basically three interpretations. One is like a public persona, one is like a private persona, and then there's what Michael refers to as the Akashic Records overleaves. Whether we see them that way or not, they're on record that way in the Akashic Records. And one is not more helpful than the other, so just take these with a grain of salt and use them if they make sense to you. If not, you can mix and match them with the other channels' overlays. But these are the ones that I received. All right. So we have a sick panel.
I'm not sick. I sneezed, and I just can't seem to recover.
So if these overlays are accurate, what do you guys notice first about these candidates?
That the
a lot
Republicans
of
sages,
doctor.
The Republicans
what?
Are in dominance.
Wait, so one at a time. What, Sandy, who, what?
I said there's a lot of sages out there. I guess only two, but still
yeah.
Two out of four. That's 50%
of the... And what did you say, Cypress?
There's a lot of dominance in the Republican ticket.
Yeah, another thing I've noticed is that the Republican Party, we talked about this earlier off air, that the Republican Party seems to be really dominated by a lot of young souls, which makes a lot of sense because it's the party that's really kind of been exemplifying everything that we think of as the young soul paradigm.
That's
and
true.
I'm looking at the list of Republicans that were originally running candidates, and I don't see any, let me see.
No, they're all young. I already looked.
Ron Paul is a mature soul.
Oh, yes,
and I think
it's Ron Paul.
He's the oldest of all of the Republicans.
And he's first level mature, which mostly you're pretty still much manifesting seventh level young at that age, aren't you?
Well, there would still be an appeal to the young souls, but, yeah, definitely trying to implement some more mature soul concept.
But wasn't he the most normal Republican?
He'd be the closest to maybe bringing
yeah.
back, taking away the religious hijacking of the Republican Party. And then the Democratic Party, I'm noticing...
mature souls.
Yeah, a lot of mature souls. Kucinich is the oldest one. He's up there being an old soul, but he's the only one in the Democratic Party that were nominees that I can think of or that were major.
Well,
ones.
Yeah, and he never had a chance to start with.
Yeah,
I don't think
he'll.
Yeah, we're not quite ready
submission.
For an old. We're not quite ready for an old soul in the White House again, I'm sure. A lot of people
yeah.
aren't. But so that's one of the patterns I've noticed. And so I wanted to go into, let's see, where we are, to the question of whether we are doomed or not. And this is coming from a question that I think Leela posted in the forum. And I wanted to read the response to this so we can discuss it. This is directly from Michael. We can discuss this, how we feel about this, okay? So she asked, are we truly doomed to another 4 to 8 more years of what we currently have with a different face? How are things looking at the moment, knowing it could change in the next moment? So Michael says, we cannot answer your first question with any amount of accuracy, especially within the context of doom, as we do not see any probability that could be described as being doomed. You are a creative and durable race of sentience and can find ways to work through or around disappointing or devastating directions in politics toward an agreed-upon ideal. In answer to your second question, we can say that the probability is high that a majority of personalities will not, quote-unquote, be happy with the results of this election, regardless of who wins, because inherent in the position are high probabilities of backlash. The next president has a high probability of being known as a president of disaster or collapse as the population roils in reaction to various events. Our point in sharing this is to say that it will not matter so much who wins the next election as much as it will matter how the public responds. In one direction, there are high probabilities of civil war and an uprising of currently stabilized groups of violent baby and young souls, while in another direction, there are high probabilities for complete breakdown of economic and social infrastructure through chaotic uprisings and protests among currently stabilized, self-righteous, late young, and early mature souls. We continue to state that the unfolding of this election still holds quite surprising factors that we cannot predict or even see in the pattern of consciousness as probabilities, such as the bringing in of the fragment known as Palin. This was not planned on any level beyond an immediate scrambling defense from among those who support the candidacy of the fragment known as McCain. A secured technical shift into a mature soul paradigm for the United States and the world is the highest probability of all, but how this plays out is possible across a spectrum ranging from all-out violence and upheaval to ecstatic bliss among the populations. So, I don't want to go into all these various probabilities, but I liked how they ended this response by saying that acknowledging your fears and concerns as legitimate, but still choosing a conscious emphasis on trust, inclusion, and love is just as strong a legitimate potential among humanity. As just as strong a legitimate potential among humanity could help to drive a new direction into higher probability. Whatever is chosen, created, or allowed, we see your sentience as having the capabilities for navigating through it to the ideal eventually. So what do you think the ideal is?
Well, the last time we both talked at the same time, this time we're both so polite going off.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sandy, what do you think the ideal is?
Go ahead, Cypress. You go first.
Well, I don't really know what the ideal is. Star Trek, where everything is taken care of and everybody gets to do jobs they enjoy and things they're good at. And I mean, of course, that's the ideal, that whole Venus Project thing that we looked at. I definitely think that would be ideal, but I don't really know how you go from a system of currency and what we have now to that type of a system. I don't know how you would integrate it. It would have to be an all-at-once event. I don't know how that would happen. I'm just not that
smart. Well, we're not
smart.
Talking so much about the process as it is the ideal. Like, what do we think of as a positive outcome from this coming election? What, as representatives of older souls who are, you know, we're a minority in numbers in terms of the Michael teachings, but we don't misrepresent an ideal that a lot of people share, regardless of soul age, like peace. It would be great. I mean, I think a lot of people are ready to just get along. A lot of people are tired of the divisions and the oppression and the exploitation, all of these things. So I think the ideal must include those things.
Well, I would think that one of the things that I'm really have, I guess, hope for and want for is that Obama wins in a really big way, because our country has been very divided. The elections were so close and sort of stolen. And, you know, with the person getting the most votes not actually being the president, and all this has really divided our country. And we need to come together again. We need somebody, we need the country to seem more unified. And if one person gets a lot of the vote, we're more likely to feel like we're in it together, as opposed to with feeling like we're completely divided. You're either red or blue and that's it. So I think I'm really hoping for that. And I do have more of a feeling of a good feeling, more of a positive feeling in the last few weeks than I have had in a while. And I feel very good about the potential. I mean, the world view of the United States will be immediately, upon him winning, would be immediately better, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, it'll definitely shift. Before we go in that direction, I want to hear from Sandy if she has an idea of what you think of as an ideal that we could potentially head toward, and, you know, if we could do it smoothly, that would be great. But what's your idea of about that?
Well, I do agree to a great extent with Cyprus. I feel that it's really important that Obama not only win, but win large. If he wins by the skin of his teeth, I would almost rather lose, because I think that that would virtually guarantee an assassination attempt. Whereas a large win could say to the world that America is still America, and that we do care, and that we do want change, and that we're willing to do what it takes to get it.
And
my idea of an ideal outcome is for the people to realize that we're in this together, and to get away from this, as long as it's good for me, it's good. I don't care what happens to my neighbor. We need to go back to our roots, which is everybody looking out for everybody.
Yes, definitely. That's where I see people on the brink. It seems like we're really, really teetering on, well, as a whole, I've seen this in my neighborhood and just seeing it online, that people are on the brink of teetering towards embrace and let's all get along kind of mentality. And
I think it can happen now. I really think the possibilities are there for it to finally happen.
Oh, yeah, and if it does, it's going to take root like, you know, wildfire. But the other side of the teetering is toward, oh my God, we have to protect our own. And a huge wedge of division that could possibly take a while to undo because of this election. And I think, there are lots of different ways we could have come to this point, but I think that if we go in the direction of the big wedge, I think the process will be a lot more arduous and a little bit more tumultuous. If we go in the direction of we're all in this together, I think it'll be a lot smoother. So which candidate do you guys think represents the direction of smoother versus the wedge?
Oh, come on.
Well, it's a legitimate question. Some people might not think that. But as older souls, what do you think?
I would think if someone does not think that it's Obama and thinks it's McCain, they really ought to have their head examined. I mean, that's not even thinking. That's like not even thinking. I can't even believe that people would be either undecided at this juncture or leaning in that direction. I mean, I know it sounds harsh, but I mean, just I just can't even wrap my head around someone's thinking that's the better direction to go. It doesn't make sense.
Geraldine in the chat room has pointed out, which I agree with, that we're not going to know a winner on November 4th, and that's really weird to me.
I hope that's not true.
I really hope that's not true as well. But when was the last time we knew that day?
Everyone except the last one?
Except for those last two that were stolen.
Oh,
if it's
okay.
A legitimate win, we'll know it that day.
Yeah, we'll know it that day.
Well, I hope so, because that will bode well. And the only way McCain will win, I think, is if it's a very, very, very close number, which may or may not be.
The only way McCain is going to win is if they steal it.
That's my feeling as well.
Now, I was thinking about something. I was talking with someone about Hillary Clinton recently because, you know, I was a Hillary fan during the primaries. And, you know, a lot of people have been saying, you know, Obama should have picked Hillary because then he would have guaranteed his win and this and that, and the Republicans wouldn't have had a chance. And just recently I was thinking, you know, I think it was a good idea that he didn't pick Hillary. Now, even though I am a Hillary fan, because it's almost like if he wins this way, he won on his own terms without that Clinton machine boost. and it's almost somehow cleaner of a win and more, I don't want to use the word respectable, but, you know, it's just, I don't know, I feel like he's earned it completely on his own without taking what could have been an easy route, but may have not been the best thing.
Yeah.
Okay, now.
Oh, go ahead, Sandy.
Are you done, Sype?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just want to say, if when Obama wins, it's going to be with a huge boost from the Clinton machine, because the Clintons have worked very hard to help get Obama elected. And
I
think
agree
the only
with
reason
that
he didn't pick her for the VP slot, and I do agree that it was a smart move, is because he's got a better place for her in the cabinet.
Well, I agree with the fact that the Clintons obviously have helped Obama because they're Democrats. You know, I mean, I saw Clinton with Obama earlier this week and that, this and that. But it's not the same thing as having them on the trail constantly, you know, and being the VP pick, saying, well, you voted for her before and now you vote for her now. And, you know, it's more like he had to earn those people back.
Hillary was here in Red State, Kentucky yesterday.
Oh, that's exciting. Did you see her?
No, I wasn't able to go. She was in Louisville, and that's pretty far from me.
Oh.
But it made me feel good that Red State that Kentucky is, they haven't written it off yet, and that Hillary was the one that they sent here to do it. She's been on the trail quite a bit. She's been a very visible and vocal presence. But frankly, I think that as VP, she would have been able to, it would almost be a reprise of her first lady role. Whereas
yeah.
in the cabinet, she can have more stature and accomplishment and areas of definite responsibility that nobody can say, oh, well, big deal, she was a vice president, what do they do?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, clearly Sarah Palin doesn't know what they do.
And it's great.
Well,
to
no,
have
she doesn't have a clue, and so she's an ideal person for that. For that role. And by the way, Troy, she is not the first woman nominee. She's the first Republican nominee. Geraldine Ferraro was the Democratic VP nominee.
Wait, who, what? Oh. Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, thank you for correcting that.
Okay.
And Hillary is a great force to have on your side to represent you if she's a mature warrior in dominance and perseverance. Hello.
Yeah,
you saw that in her campaign.
Yeah, definitely.
You can see it in everything she does.
And the pragmatist attitude in there. So that's really helpful. I'm not a big fan of Obama. Being the only option I can see as viable, my interest has grown and warmed to that, obviously. I wanted to go back to what Cypress said, or one of you said, about it being like a landslide win, or, you know, if McCain wins, it will be have stolen, and that very well may be true, but there are a lot of people. I watched The View, and that Elizabeth Hasselbeck, if she's any indication of representing the Republican side of things, she gets quite a few cheers from the audience when she's speaking in the way that I find to be very disturbing in defense of the Republican Party. And so I don't know. I don't know if it's really that cut and dried.
Well, I do not think that unrealistic to think that John McCain is going to get some votes. I mean, I'm certainly, and I'm not even saying it won't be close. I'm afraid that it will be. But what I'm saying is that what we need is a landslide. Because if we have a landslide, then people will feel more unified, I think. However, that right-wing wackadoodle nut job Hasselbeck is representative of a lot of people. And they're going to vote. But because of the way everything is set up, if we have more people voting, you know, that are Democratic, that are voting Democrat, we can win that state.
Oh,
so it's not even if they vote, because if they vote, I mean, they're Republicans. I mean, we've talked several times about some people that I know in Wisconsin who, you know, I mean, I can't even have a discussion with. I think they're completely insane, even though I love them, you know. But Wisconsin still will end up being a blue state. And so even though those people will certainly go out and vote in en masse, they won't win the state.
How bizarre will it be if Arizona's won over?
I know that would be.
And they're
so
looking
crazy
at it as being a good chance. You know, people from Arizona know what kind of a crook he is.
And
yeah,
a lot of them have moved from
while.
The Northeast. A lot of Arizona people are transplanted from the Northeast.
So let's move on to the economy and how this is all going to play out. I wanted to read a couple of things that have been collected over the past month or so from the forum, from people asking questions about the economy, and discuss that. So let's see. The first thing is someone asked, can Michael give some perspective on the current economic crisis? How do you see its effect for the future at this time? And Michael says, we cannot and will not predict, of course, blah, 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 but we can share our perspective of the patterns as they appear to be unfolding at this time. Our perspective of the quote-unquote crisis is one that we see as, quote-unquote, a good thing, in that it coincides precisely with the shift in Soul Age and in a global platform, which is a whole other concept that I can't get into here, but a global platform from one of debt to one of choice. The United States originated from mature and old soul values and systems, but quickly fell into the processes of the young soul paradigm because the young soul inhabitants under the older souls eventually began to run things. Now that the world paradigm is shifting into mature soul values and systems, it makes sense to us that structures based in debt and young soul ideals would begin to transform. However, the process of a shift from young to mature has high potential for drama, as that is the nature of the mature soul, or at least part of the nature. The current economic crisis is moving to a global level because the global consciousness is shifting. Economy exists in physical, emotional, intellectual, and spiritual realms. So as one dominant structure shifts, all levels of currency and exchange will shift. Debt-based economy is no longer of interest to the majority of souls on your planet, but what kind of economy to move into has not been clarified or secured yet. Most simply know that something is not right and something needs to change. The single most powerful medium for change for all fragments on the planet at this time is economic. No other medium could affect change in evolution to the extent that an economic overhaul could bring. This also makes sense to us as a planet moves out of a young soul paradigm. The dominant soul age uses the relevant predominant medium as a transition. For instance, when the shift happened from baby to young souls about 2,000 years ago, it was based in a religious medium. So before I go on to the next part, what do you guys think of that? Does that make sense to you guys? Does that ring true? Were you
listening?
You
know, well, I was listening, and some of it does, and then every time I think, yeah, I get it, then you said something that I thought, well, I don't exactly get that.
Okay, what would that be?
So I don't know exactly where I stand on this. I do think that economics are going to have a large part in determining what this outcome is going to be.
Or
because
you mean,
I think that
you mean like whoever wins, economy is going to be the medium.
It's going to be a large part of the driving force to that victory.
Yeah.
If people don't think that their economic situation is going to get better, they're not going to vote for that person no matter what. And again, living down here now in Red State, Kentucky, I have heard a number of dyed-in-the-wool Republicans say that they can't bring themselves to vote for Obama. And so they're going to stay home. They won't vote against their economic interest by voting for McCain, but they can't bring themselves to vote for a Democrat, so they're just going to not vote. I've heard it a lot more than I've ever heard it before.
So see, I think that's going to be part of what contributes to the possibility of Obama's loss, if that were to happen, that kind of mentality. That's unfortunate.
Well,
but the,
as long as that mentality is only in Republicans, it's no harm.
My dad has voted Republican in every election, and he's voting for Obama.
Good for him.
Well, the point of this little piece that I read was that when a soul age paradigm shifts on a planet, it's done through the medium of whatever was the predominant medium for the soul age that has been in place for quite a long time. So religion was a big part of the world paradigm when it shifted about 2,000 years ago. So a religious basis was used. And now it's moved into economy or money being the predominant medium of concern in people's lives, I guess you could say, or affects every single person's life. So that's the medium for the change that will help move us into a mature soul world. So what I'm asking is, do you guys find that to be a valid concept?
Well, yes, I do, because it's the thing that keeps people separated right now, is your financial status, what you're able to do, what you're able not to do. If you look at not just our country, but the world, evening out that the economy, evening out money, not in a communist way, but in the way where not just, you know, less than 1% of the population holds 99% of the wealth. You know, that's just not going to work going forward. And I'm making a big jump in assuming here, but in assuming a mature soul society where people, what is the mature soul thing? I know how you feel. You know, it's not going to be accepted to have people starving and people dying and people not having medical care and people not being able to have the regular, just the basic needs of survival. It's not going to be okay.
Yeah.
So money is the big contributing factor to that.
I agree with that wholeheartedly, Cypress. You expressed that very well.
Yes, that was... I think, is the point, is that since economy
is... economics or money for its own sake, it's the fact that people are no longer willing to see some people starve while other people are lighting their cigars with $100 bills.
Right. So I'm going to go on and read the rest of this where Michael's talking about the economy in terms of choice versus debt and see if that sheds any more light on the circumstances and possibilities. So Michael says, economy generated by choice, because someone asked, what would that look like? Let's see what they asked exactly. What is a choice economy based from? Perhaps prioritization of resources. Is the system the same but with a different emphasis, or is the system markedly different? And Michael says, an economy generated by choice would be one in which each individual finds that which he or she is best at contributing and then does so because it feels good to do, create, and give that thing. This is then reciprocated by the joy others have found in discovering what they feel good about doing, creating, and giving. Access to all resources is based on personal need and not on hoarding. No one would tend to take more than is needed because the concept of competition has come to a close. Competition is replaced with contribution. Natural joy and fulfillment evolves from the emphasis on giving and not just on the consuming. Quote-unquote laziness is no longer a concern because it is comprehended that for one to give or contribute, it must come from choice, not from obligation or expectations. This tends toward a community that sustains inspiration and enthusiasm while honoring the fluctuating moods and choices of the individual. There are no debts because when one cannot or chooses not to give or contribute, he is seen as simply making a choice that will then be replaced with another choice at another time. This economy tends to begin with a leaning toward fields organized within contexts of need and want, with some amount of overlapping. For instance, foods, sanitation, water supplies, healing, teaching services may fall into the needs context, while arts, entertainment, invention, spirituality may fall into the wants context. Of course, the overlapping occurs when one can see art as a form of healing or as invention as a form of support for sanitation, etc. The economy of choice then tends to discover that everything is needed and that want is a concept of the past, when it was assumed that want was a less important than need. In the evolved economy of choice, it is quickly discovered that it is rare that one wants more than one needs, and that this is a relative concern best left to the individual. While there would still be pros and cons to this kind of economy, such as structure and consistencies, the pros far outweigh the cons in terms of health, happiness, and peace. So there's more I'm going to read in a second, but what do you guys think of that?
Sounds like Star Trek to me.
Yeah, it really sounds very good description of the choices to come and what the results are going to mean. And I think sometimes I think that Michael forgot what it's like to be here. But in this particular case, I don't. I think he really gets it there. And I really like what he has to say.
The complicated part is the fact that, and maybe one of the reasons why the economy is just in the toilet, is because if people are very wealthy, they're not going to want to be given that up. And they'll feel like they're giving up everything and other people are giving up nothing. So if things happen, like catastrophe-type things that happen that take that away and they don't have that option anymore and you can rebuild, because you'd have to basically rebuild and restructure everything. But the people who are in power now are the people who have the money.
Well, we've done it before, and we can do it again. We can begin.
You know, I'm an idealist, and I know that colors
what I think, Troy.
A lot of times. But in spite of that, I have to look at the fact that, yes, the people in power, the people with the most money who have the most to lose, are really going to hate this kind of a change. But that's when it's important to remember that it's only 1% of them. So 99% are struggling of people everywhere. And I think that when the change that we're looking for isn't to take everything away from that 1%, but it is to equalize the burden and to take some of the burden off the lowest end and move things more toward the middle. You know, we used to have worldwide an upper class, a middle class, and a poorer class. More and more countries don't have that anymore. There's that 1% of rich people and the 99% that are struggling to survive.
Or
and they're just not willing to do that anymore.
Well, not only do we have to keep in mind that 1% or so is with all the money, but if the value of money continues to lose its power, that's part of what the process would be. So who cares if they throw in a fight?
That was my point.
Yeah.
Because...
I don't know. I personally, I'm just here to discuss these, you know, these probabilities that Michael's talking about. But I, as a individual, don't really know how the process would become implemented or how that would what that would look like. But I know that it will probably start.
Well, I am not an idealist like the two of you, but I think it is. I think that it would be the best case scenario, obviously. And I mean, who wouldn't want to live somewhere where everybody got to do what they were good at or what they wanted to do, what they had an interest in, what made them happy to get up and go do it every day and have everything taken care of based on that. I mean, it sounds wonderful and utopian, and I am totally on board with it. My point was, maybe the reason we are having this economic crisis now is because that 1%, even if there is only one, they can be allowed percent if they have all the money, and they're not going to just turn it over and go, you know,
yeah,
let's just give it to everybody else because, you know, would be the right thing to do. It's
well,
going to be
no,
something.
They're never gonna...
It's going to be something where it has to lose its value. It has to. They have to. They have to have some incentive. There has to be some reason for them to want to change things, and that reason would be that what they have now doesn't really count for anything.
I want to share with you what Geraldine says in the chat room. She says, I don't agree that when poor achieve power, that it doesn't include a driving urge for wealth. Every revolution has had this flip-flop. And I think that's true, but I think that...
I think that's true, too, but I don't think that's the point.
Yeah, I think that even if that's the motivating power here, I think that it'll eventually be a different form of power that's utilized in this case, in this shift that's happening.
Yeah, see, what I'm looking at, I don't expect the poor to suddenly have power because that's kind of self-defeating. But I just think that more and more people are coming to realize that they don't want to live in a world where anybody starves to death.
Right, and if the poor who have been suffering in this to some degree or any degree, have a higher sensitivity to or empathize with other people, and I think it'll be a lot more emphasis on sharing in that regard. So I want to go on with the next part here. Somebody asked, on a practical level, how does a choice-based economy deal with money and concepts of trade and markets? I don't mean stock markets, I mean actual markets. I ask because it's hard to imagine in real terms what this would look like since humanity has lived with market economies for a very long time. And so Michael says, trade would still exist, but would be a matter of choice and comprehension, not rationing. Exchanges would be direct rather than through the use of a controlling, irrelevant medium such as currency. A choice-based economy is a resource-based economy that does not rely on money. This may be a bizarre concept, but it is natural and a part of most evolving cultures at some point. In other words, a choice-based / resource-based economy would ask, do we have the resources to provide what we need and want, rather than do we have the money to provide what we need and want? Relying on resource as the factor for access and sharing frees up a massive depth of resources inherent within humanity that have rarely been tapped. We realize we are speaking in simplistic terms, and this is partially due to the fact that what we describe would require a much greater elaboration if we are to share the details of such an overhauling paradigm, and partially due to the limitations of this channel, hello, that's me, and students for delivering and comprehending such a paradigm. So in that kind of economy, I'm done with the quote now, but in that kind of economy, one of the things that has come up, one of the things I've heard people say is that, well, if everybody had that kind of choice, then we're going to have like this big wave of freeloaders and people taking advantage of it. And I think that kind of concern is coming from our current paradigm, our current system that's in place where people are forced to do things that they don't want to do, that they don't love to do, and that drives them to take advantage and exploit situations that make things easier for them, or at least that they think makes it easier for them. But in a world where things are given and shared and what you contribute is based on what you're good at, I think that would completely change the way we experience that concept of laziness and freeloading.
Yeah, Leslie points out in the chat room, I finally got the chat room, by the way, she's that maybe a mature soul paradigm will break the cycle, and I think that's exactly the point.
Oh, yeah.
When we're looking at things from a more mature soul point of view and empathy for one another, we're not going to assume that everybody that isn't at work today is freeloading.
Right.
We're going to say, wonder what's going on in his, her life.
Yeah, and we
wonder what they need.
Yeah, there would be a lot more interest in helping people, because and also you know, the whole concept of depression and illness and all the things that run us down, especially in the American culture, would shift and change, and health would be a priority. Our well-being would be a priority. So all of this stuff, regardless of how it comes about, whether it's dramatic or whether it's slow or whether it's, you know, an overhaul overnight, which I doubt will happen, but all of this is good in the long run. And I think that if Obama is elected, that will be a very good sign.
So, I agree wholeheartedly.
Now, two things that Michael talked about also recently in the forum, and I really think that this captures two sides of what's going on here. It kind of captures the concerns of the mature soul and the ideals of the old souls that are in, that are, you know, helping bring this shift about, if you could put it that way. But they said at the end of the piece I just read, they said, "We have suggested to read the works that are being explored and implemented by those within, or by the King fragment, Jacques Fresco. And we would suggest the same for our students. In many this fragment holds the greatest impact on what we would consider to be the future of our species." So it's, his name is Jacques Fresco, and he is part of the person, he's the one who holds this vision for what's been called the Venus Project. And the Venus Project basically describes everything that Michael's talking about that we're headed toward. And so this is one side. This is like the ideal that I think that we actually may be able to create and live in at some point as a species. But on the other side of things is the concern that's represented by Naomi Wolf. And she's the one who put together a documentary called The End of America. And I want to read to you what Michael said about Naomi Wolf. She's a fifth-level mature sage, king caste sage, with a goal of discrimination, a realist in observation mode, sliding to passion, and a chief negative feature of arrogance. The viewpoints shared by this fragment, while passionate and full of urgency, are valid. She exemplifies the use of fear as a source of information or informative decision-making and not as a source of reactionary defense. Her insights and urgency invite activism from those who are willing to participate in the potential revolutions ahead. Keep in mind that we have spoken of your current timeline running parallel to the timeline of Caesar Augustus. Comprehending this can help your collective consciousness implement what was learned before so that it's not repeated in the same way. What this fragment shares here is not new to us. So that, okay, so I see Naomi Wolf as representing the positive side of our fears and concerns. She's really delineated all the potential destructive measures that could come about from a handful of people who are in control. And there's no conspiracy, there's no, you know, it's very informative, and it's just about really upholding our constitutional rights and being informed and being aware. And I see that as a positive thing. And then Jacques Fresco and all of that work on the Venus Project represents, hopefully, whether we go through a revolution or whether we go through a smooth transition, that's where we are all ultimately headed, at least for the next phase. So I'll give you guys links and details to Naomi Wolf's work and Jacques Fresco's work in the show notes. But what do you guys think, little panel, what do you think of those two sides of things? Or not two sides, but the complementary perspectives there.
Yeah, that is very actually complementary perspectives, and I think they sound great. And I do think it's going to be a gradual process, but I think that more and more people are going to be getting on board, and I think that, this election is going to signal, if it's not stolen away from us, it's going to signal the beginning of real change. And if this election is stolen away from us, I do think that there's still going to be big change, but it's going to be a lot more violent change, because that, I think that there could really be a chance of a civil war if we get robbed again.
That is exactly what I was thinking, Sandy. I was like, if Obama wins, I think that it has more, we have more of a potential or probability of going down the line of a smoother, more comfortable change. And if the election is stolen, which is the only way I feel McCain really can win, then I really think the change will be extreme and revolutionary, as opposed to everyone getting on board.
Yes.
Now, did you guys watch the Naomi Wolf documentary?
I did, yes.
I did.
Did you find it to be informative or terrifying and fear-based or just a source of awareness?
I found it to be informative and terrifying.
Okay. Yeah, well,
not necessarily fear-based, but I felt that it was very informative, but I still found it to be very frightening.
I, again, have to agree. I had that same thought. I don't think that she does it in a fear-based way, but it really does ignite that core aspect of you when you sit there and you think, you know, what if that happens to me? You know, and I have no recourse for anything, and my voice doesn't count anymore, and, you know, I don't have any rights anymore. You know, I mean, there would turn our country into Germany, you know, and you think in your head,
old
and when
Germany.
I watched, excuse me?
Old Germany.
Oh, yeah. When I was thinking in my head at the time, I was like, you know, when they were showing old footage of Germany before the war and before Hitler, and, you know, how they had, you know, open gay rights, and, I mean, all these kind of things that you wouldn't have really necessarily associated with Germany.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, and they were probably thinking, as these things began to happen, they were probably thinking, oh, well, that's never, you know, that's not going to really happen to us. We're, you know, we're obviously, you know, more evolved than that, and, you know, and the people here matter, and it that's not going to happen. And that's what I think that people here would. Even as I was watching it, I'm thinking, well, they're not going to let that stuff actually get too far. But once you're taking the steps, it already is too far, and you can't get things back. And what if they make decisions where all of a sudden we don't have the right, you know, to speak up and to do anything? Because when you do, then you're, you know, carted away and never to be seen again.
Well,
they started already during the conventions.
That's
yeah,
true.
I know. And that's what I was going to say, is that I think that one of the shifts that Michael has talked about is a key shift in towards a mature soul world, a paradigm, is the loss of privacy. And on the one hand, that sounds really terrifying, and we do need to worry about that. But at the same time, it works in our favor, because we're able to document all of these things that are happening that we never would have been able to share before and bring people to alert. So there's a certain level of privacy that we're giving up in order to be able to bring attention to these otherwise covert operations that are happening right in the middle of America under our noses. And now we know. And now we got to figure out what to do to stop it or to change that.
I don't know, I think that movie should be shown on all the channels prime time.
I definitely think so, too. So if you're listening to this show, definitely take time. Go to endofamerica.com. I think it's called that. Endofamericamovie.com. Yeah. Endofamericamovie.com. That's very important to watch. And don't let it scare you. Let it just inform you. And also, if you're really interested in what you can do, then there's a website that she's put together called myamericaproject.org, and this will help you to, I haven't looked at it since, because she wasn't done putting everything up, but it's a list of things that we can do, like that we can actually make a difference in protecting our constitutional rights. And then if you're interested in exploring the Venus Project, which is an amazing, beautiful design that's very complex and is really taking into consideration everything that would need to be in place for this transition to happen, thevenusproject.com. Actually, include the word the, thevenusproject.com. Check that out. It's very inspiring, but it can also be depressing because it really showcases what we have as a potential in humanity and that we haven't been doing it. But that's okay. You can't look at it like that. You have to look at it as a direction that we could possibly go towards. So those links will be in the show notes too. But I wanted to go on to the next part here and see if this is informative, because I want this all to be in the final archived show for people to hear. But there were some questions about soul age and government and what those look like for different soul ages. And what it led to was, let's see, well, I don't want to read all of it, but I wanted to bring to a point something that we've had under our noses this whole time, that Michael, when we can't really conceive of what it would be like to have a non-authoritarian government where we shift into a world of choice and contribution, we've had that in our midst for the past 10 years, whether we realized it or not. And that would be the Internet.
Oh, yeah.
What has come from having the Internet is a complete shift in so many levels of exchange that we can see how it could work. We can see the open source programs, the sharing of files, there's nobody in charge. There's nobody policing it to some extent there is, but it's growing towards that direction, but it hopefully won't go completely in that direction. But it's a non-centralized government. It's a non-centralized political system. And Michael says, when someone asks how are the Internet and politics related, Michael says, well, if politics is seen as a term to describe how a body of people govern themselves and resolve apparent conflicts, then the Internet could be seen as a system of politics. In this case, as would be the case for an old soul world, communication would be at the core of those politics, and the intellect as economy. So I found that to be very fascinating. What do you think of this as a representative of potential that we've been working on for this whole time?
I never thought of that.
Me either.
That it's very interesting and seems to be accurate. I mean, it's not far-reaching. You don't have to stretch. It's right there. You just hadn't thought of it.
Yeah, and there's so many people contributing freely. It is amazing how much you can get for free, legally for free, online because of the resources that are available. And the tapped, freely given resources of the individuals participating. People love to give. I mean, they love to contribute. It's so exciting. People are contributing videos. They're contributing blogs. They're contributing documentation. They're contributing archives of reading material and references. I mean, there's just everything there, at least on an intellectual level. And then, of course, that affects us in our daily lives because we're able to use those as tools for change in our lives if we choose to, or entertainment if we want to. But it's a beautiful reality that we've had right there under our noses.
Yeah, I definitely think that people are interested in sharing, especially if it is, when something's not taken from you, when you're allowed to offer it freely, there's a really good feeling about that. And I think people do enjoy that. and benefit from it, both, from this being the one who's sharing, not to mention, of course, the one who is able to use it. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Oh, and I agree wholeheartedly. People are very much more willing to give something than they are to have it taken from them.
Yeah.
And that can be the big difference.
Yeah, or when you feel responsible, it's like responsible for doing something is different than saying, let me do that, you know, or whatever. It's, or let me share this, or I've done this and I would like you to see it. It's more of a sharing. And that's, it does really feel good. And I think the more you do that type of thing, the more that expands your feeling. That just makes the entire world better, person by person.
Well, Beryl in the chat room, I think she's asking a rhetorical question, but she's saying, speaking of privacy, will the shift away from young souls in our celebrity worship get rid of the paparazzi? And then Leslie responds, dream on.
People are too obsessed with that kind of stuff.
Well, we can say that from this perspective, but what do you think it would be like? You know, would we really worship people who, on a level, would we look at things from a perspective of status in the future, in a world where we're all sharing?
I don't think it's a matter so much of worship or status, but people are always going to be curious.
Also, what about appreciation? I mean, because, for instance, someone who does something of a creative nature, you don't have to worship a singer or a performer, but you can appreciate someone so much because what they do brings something to your life, so that appreciation is interest. Can be formulated sort of into interest. Because, yes,
that's a very good point.
You know, I mean, because that's, what do you, if you saw, you know, Chris Garneau going to be on TV, you'd be there watching because you have an interest in it. Whether it was a paparazzi thing or whether it was doing a show, because you have interest in him, you feel that his music bring something to your life.
Well,
and
I think that
to it.
I think her question being more specifically about getting rid of paparazzi, I think it actually would, because the whole point of the competitive, overwhelming paparazzi is for money, is for that currency. Instead, we'd have people who do it well and do it appropriately in position, instead of people just taking it because it's a competitive arena that they have to fight for the best photo.
I guess honestly, I wasn't really thinking about it.
For a minute, I lost my ability to speak.
I wasn't really thinking about it in the paparazzi aspect. I was thinking
about
it more.
That's why I was turning it towards that. But your theory is, I think, totally right. Yeah, we won't lose our fascination with our teachers and our healers and our entertainers. We're not going to lose that. That's a part of what makes the world amazing.
Right, but maybe we would also be more, maybe it would be more of a respectful thing where it was, you know, you would have more compassion for the fact that they're humans too and treat them more like that as opposed to more like, you know, some sort of caged animal that you want to poke at for your own entertainment.
Well, I think that the sensationalized aspect of things would probably die down because we wouldn't be so interested in that kind of exploitation. Like somebody, this is pure speculation, but I'm thinking something like Britney Spears would not even exist in a predominantly mature soul paradigm because there would be intervention, there would be, it wouldn't be a manufactured artist, and there wouldn't be all of these people competing for a field that was manufactured and created just for the attention and the money. So I think that the sensationalized aspect and the exploitive aspect of celebrity would totally begin to die down.
Yeah, it would be people who create for that reason and not for...
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right, not for the celebrity status. And you know, I mean, you could take anybody who's cute and change their vocals and dress them up and tell them what to say and do their hair and make a star.
Yeah, which is exactly...
what they did.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, if anybody has ever seen that footage where they actually took an individual who couldn't sing, who was just pretty, and got a guy who churns out pop hits, like minute after minute. He can just make them up on the spot, and they turn them into hits. And got somebody who couldn't play an instrument very well, and the software can completely transform voices and put into key the singer and the instruments, and then they manufacture an identity and promote it, and now you have a pop star. It is so creepy
and fascinating. And that's not going to change.
I don't think that'll change right away, but I think that would change.
I don't think it'll ever change because it's entertainment, and people like to be entertained, and everybody doesn't like the same thing.
Well, that's
and the
true,
people
Sandy.
That enjoy that are still going to enjoy it.
But the difference would be is that in a society where everyone did what brought what talents they have to the table, you would, if you weren't a good singer, then you wouldn't be a good singer.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
also,
because the person who brings the talent to the table, the ability to make you look like a good singer, is going to bring that talent to the table.
Yeah, I just
and
think
if there's people that you appeal to, they're still gonna. That's not gonna change.
Well, I think a level of honesty would become a part of our culture that's not necessarily here currently, because
in a lot of ways, but not in our entertainment.
But those people can't actually entertain. I mean, you can't go see somebody like that person he was talking about, where they. I saw that video where they completely transformed that person and made a pop hit, but you can't go see that person perform because they can't.
Well, but I get what she's
saying.
Yeah,
that's true. But Troy's using that example is the one that Troy's using. But when he's making this statement, he's talking about every pop star on commercial radio today.
He
doesn't believe one of them has legitimate talent.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking specifically about manufactured pop stars, not pop stars who are good at what they do and people like it, whether I like it or not. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the manufactured ones, the ones who actually cannot sing live.
Name one person who cannot sing live who is very popular today. Just give me an example of what you're talking about.
Well, I'm not fans of them, so I can't say.
Sandy.
Uh-huh.
Sandy,
uh-huh.
I think that he was bringing up something that we saw online where they were showing what they can do. I mean, nobody's accusing anyone particularly.
But I can name one. Let's just go with Milli Vanilli.
But they were found out and it was ended. Their career
That's
ended as
point.
Soon as they were found out.
That's my point, though. That kind of thing has become a little bit more seamless and... an image is what's sold over a quality of content, and I think that will shift, because there was another group, I can't remember who it was. I think it was CC Music Factory also had like a big fat black woman who sang the vocals, but they had a skinny, hot, big boobed black chick sing or do the videos, because they didn't think that it would sell that there was a heavy black woman singing. And I think one of the groups, I can't remember which one it is, it's a male singer. I can't remember the group. I'm sure somebody listening knows. But they also put a fake image up to represent the group, and meanwhile it's a big fat white guy singing, and they didn't want to sell it, but they didn't think it would sell. Eventually he came out and he's been selling just fine. So that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, the discrepancy between what is being given, what is at the heart of the creativity versus the packaging is. And I think a lot of honesty is going to, I think people are going to go towards and prefer a more sincere, honest, creative contribution instead of these manufactured images.
Well, Right, because whether you like the music or not, there are plenty of people in all aspects of music that can sing and can perform and have talent. Whether you like their particular style or not is really irrelevant.
That's
they
true.
Have the ability to perform and they have the ability to sing. But I think what Troy was getting at is the people who don't, that it's created. And that will be less appealing because it's phony and not real.
I would love to have, as the show gets more, you know, now that we have a stable schedule, I would love callers to start calling in, and we have had no callers. So I am forced to use my caller transition tune with no callers. But if there were to be a caller right now, you would have been introduced with this lovely ditty. Hi, welcome, caller. We'd love to hear from you. I'm so glad you called. Hi, caller. What would you like to talk about today? Thank you for calling. I love that you called.
Why were we forced to hear that?
Because that's what people
because what?
To, because when people listen to this, they'll be like, oh, my God, I would love to be introduced with that tune.
Or they will be scared away.
I can't believe that didn't inspire somebody to call in right now, especially Anne.
Well, now we're almost out of time, but I want to go over a really important part of this whole show, which is what can we do? As older souls, what can we do? I mean, besides having conversations like this and really focusing on the fear side of things, because it's really important to realize that our fear is not just to make us scared. It's to inform us. Fear is a very vital and important part of our experience on the planet. And based on Michael's information, it's really helped a lot of people to realize that it's not something to fight. It's not something to ignore. It's not something to get overwhelmed with. It's something to use as a source of information. Because fear, whether it's warranted or not, is used. It usually comes up as a sign that you feel a need to protect yourself. So paying attention to what you're afraid of can help you to make better choices. Being conscious of your choices can help you make choices that are towards directions that you'd like to create instead of hiding under fear. So fear is really important. I think that's the really important thing to take away from this show, is that if you're feeling overwhelmed, if you're feeling fearful, if you're feeling a little bit out of, you know, sync with what's happening in politics, that's okay. Pay attention to what you're afraid of. See if there's information in it. If there's nothing useful in it, then give yourself, you know, a little bit of room to make some choices anyway. The other thing that Michael's talked about that we can do as older souls in this mature soul, young to mature soul world, in the weeks and years ahead, is something that doesn't come natural to a lot of older souls, because we've been around the block, we've been through a lot of different governments, we've been through a lot of different economies, we've been through a lot of different soul age cultures, and so we're a little bit tired of it. We get a little bit like, okay, that's been fun. We're going to leave it to the kids now. But we still are a part of this world, and we should be able to participate in it if we want to. And the best way to do that, if you want to make the world a better place, Michael has said emphatically, you just do something. And that's the element that a lot of us leave out, is the doing part. We meditate, we pray, some people pray, we think positive thoughts, we send energy, we focus on potential, but we don't always do something. So if you look around your community or your home or wherever you have any kind of power, any kind of influence, any kind of capability of contributing, and just pick a few things to do that you think contribute to a better world, that's really all you can do. What do you guys think?
I think everyone
said it
quote.
First, but be the change you want to see.
Who said that?
I don't remember, but it's been out on the internet everywhere.
I think it's one of those. I think it's a president.
Could be.
Oh, I'm going to feel really ignorant if I don't really know. But I thought it was. The black president from.
Nelson Mandela?
Mandela.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh.
Maybe so. I don't know if he's.
Forgive
if
my
he
ignorance.
Said it first or not. But the point is, it's true.
Yeah, it's true. If you have an ideal in your head, if you have a direction you would like the country to go, then do, or the world to go, then you need to participate and bring that into the world, not just in thoughts, not just in emotion, but in choices, in activities, and just doing one or two things that you think actually makes a difference, whether it's volunteering or whether it's just deciding to treat people better that day, or whether it's changing your diet and your choices in a way that helps contribute to, you know, less of a burden on the planet. That whatever it is, that's all that you can really do is to do it. Follow through
the
with it.
The chat room says that it was Gandhi who said it.
Oh, yay, Gandhi.
Oh, my God, I'm sorry. Thank you. You're right. That's who it was. And I'm so glad we had Tom in the chat room to clarify that.
Thanks, Tom.
We're talking
and everyone
all this
should, everyone should vote.
Absolutely.
Yes, and make sure you get out there and vote. And I would love to say vote for your, you know, it doesn't matter, just vote. But from this show.
This time it really does matter.
It matters.
Vote Obama.
Vote Obama. I can't.
And if you
guarantee,
can't do it, stay home.
If I can't guarantee that it's the best choice or the right choice, I don't know in the long run. We don't get predictions from Michael, and we don't care to, because we think of the future as something we all create on our own and together. So there's no guarantee. But based on what we have as information now, it looks like Obama's the way to go. And I think that that's a good idea.
You're very, very tactful about the whole thing. I say vote for the right person, vote for Obama. I have no
I
qualms.
Second that emotion.
There you go. So let's wind up the show, and I want to thank you guys for being a part of it. Thanks a lot. We have a couple of minutes left, and this was a really great return to the schedule. So we're going to keep this up, and I hope we have some participation from other people.
So when are we back again? 2 weeks? 1 week?
No,
once a month?
First Sunday next month.
Okay.
So
you don't get carried away.
In 2009, if we can fit more onto the schedule, we will. But otherwise, these will be the first Sunday will be the live ones. So
okay.
Thank you guys. I'm going to wind up the show now, and I'll talk to you guys later. Thank you for being a part of the show. And
always
I just want you to know, the reason why you're on here is because you two have been regularly praised in emails because they love hearing your perspective on things. No one says anything about me and my work. They always rave about Sandy and Cyprus. Sandy and Cyprus. So
we
I'm glad you guys are part
you.
Of it. All right. I'll talk to you guys later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So thank you guys for tuning in to TLE Radio, or Truth, Love, Energy Radio. And thank you. Oh, Lord, it's loud. Thank you to my panel, Sandy and Cypress. Lovely as ever. And if you'd like to learn more about the Michael teachings, just pop over to truthloveenergy.com and check out the basic introduction and go from there. Archived podcast along with Cocteau Boy TV and Truth Love Energy TV, which should start this month, and my always riveting personal blog and video log are also available there. So tune in every first Sunday now at 1 p.m. Eastern to participate in the live call-in show. So until next time, and remember, we are here to learn how to choose and to choose how to learn.